Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. One of the most widespread and pernicious sources of economic insecurity these days for millions of average American families is medical debt. According to experts at the National Consumer Law Center, medical debt frequently leads to all manner of big and debilitating burdens, including bad credit ratings, nagging debt collectors, and even bankruptcies and home foreclosures. Right now, the simplest and most effective tool to reduce consumer medical debt in North Carolina would be for state lawmakers to follow the lead of 38 other states by expanding Medicaid eligibility. But another important tactic that's also the subject of a bill at the General Assembly involves requiring hospitals to meet their legal and moral obligations in providing charity care and refraining from abusive collection practices. And recently I caught up with a national expert who drafted the model legislation that helped inspire the North Carolina proposal, National Consumer Law Center attorney Jennifer Bosco.
Welcome to News and Views. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
We've seen a bill introduced in our General Assembly that would seek to aid consumers struggling with medical debt. And some of the provisions, indeed, as I understand it, mirror a model bill prepared by the National Consumer Law Center. But before we get into that, talk to us about this issue. How big of a problem is medical debt? I sense maybe this is an issue that sort of flies under the radar for a lot of average people. They're not aware of what a big issue it really is.
You know, I think that's right. I think a lot of people aren't aware that the medical debt is such a big issue and that, you know, when you're faced with an unaffordable medical bill, that it's not just an individual experience. You're sort of having this problem that a lot of your neighbors are having as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are, you know, a number of statistics that sort of point to how big the problem is. I think it's hard to get, you know, really solid estimates of mm-hmm. you know, the full extent of it. But you know, estimates on the amount of medical debt that Americans hold in the aggregate range from $88 billion to $140-plus billion.
Wow.
So definitely a lot. And of that, you know, there are a lot of people with smaller medical debts, but many of those, the bulk of those really are catastrophic medical debts, large amounts, large bills from when, you know, someone has an accident or, you know, medical emergency that results in a lot of bills. Medical debt is cited as one of the most reported reasons for filing bankruptcy. You know, it's kind of in combination with other problems, because if you have medical debt, you probably have had a medical problem that's interfered with your ability to work, but it certainly compounds those economic problems. It is the most frequent item on credit reports, although luckily there are a few changes coming down the road that may improve that for consumers. And I also probably should have started out by saying that from, you know, statistics that the Urban Institute has compiled and others, we see across the country that communities of color tend to face higher levels of medical debt than white communities.
I guess there's just something almost cruel to contemplate the idea of someone, let's say, who's had cancer and been in the hospital and racked up a huge bill, and now they've got a collection agency badgering them, or maybe even someone trying to take their home, maybe to foreclose on their home. But that literally happens, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, every state is a little bit different about mm-hmm. The protections that exist for consumers. And I guess we'll get a little more into that as well. But, you know, in a lot of states, your wages can be garnished for medical debt if you're taken to court, yet you can be sued. And unfortunately, there, you know, have been instances of people who are being sued for medical debt and they don't appear at a hearing. Maybe they don't get the notice or something happens and they wind up having a civil arrest warrant and they're actually arrested.
Amazing. And I presume it's worse in states like North Carolina that haven't expanded Medicaid. So we've got even a larger share of our population without health insurance. I guess health insurance obviously plays a role, but there's probably times when health insurance companies themselves don't pay off. But the bottom line, it would seem to be logical that North Carolinians are probably in a tougher boat than a lot of folks because so many of them are completely uninsured.
Yeah, unfortunately, if you look at the states with the highest rates of medical debt in among their population, the states that have not expanded Medicaid tend to be at the top of that list. And a lot of those states are concentrated in the Southeast.
It's something we still hold out hope that perhaps there will be some change coming. We're talking with Jennifer Bosco. Jen is a staff attorney with the National Consumer Law Center with a specialty, among other issues, in this medical debt issue. So we've seen some of the scope of the problem. We've discussed some of that. What do we do about this? Now, we know there are actually charity care policies, right, that hospitals in our state are supposed to abide by when it comes to serving people who literally can't afford their health care?
Yes, that's certainly like one of the strategies that we advocate for to help reduce medical debt or to help really address the problem before it starts. So there's a federal requirement that nonprofit hospitals need to provide a certain amount of charity care, and that was part of the Affordable Care Act. Mm-hmm. That only applies to nonprofit hospitals, though, not for-profit hospitals, which are also very common, and not other types of healthcare providers. The federal rules also don't provide any guidelines about how much assistance and who qualifies for that assistance. They leave that up to the hospitals. So as a result, you really get kind of a patchwork system of, you know, some hospitals that are quite generous and take this responsibility seriously, and others that do the bare minimum, and others that might have a good policy on the books, but it's really hard for patients to access that. So that really opens the door for states to come in and say, okay, we want to provide some uniformity. We want to make sure that consumers know what they can expect and level the playing field for healthcare providers. So a number of states, well, actually more than half the states, have their own state charity care laws that do provide some guidance about who qualifies for charity care and how much care needs to be provided. And, you know, then at least that sets like a clear baseline for patients to know what they might be eligible for.
So what's the situation in North Carolina? We know that recently State Treasurer Dale Falwell has advanced some legislation, perhaps even in consultation with the National Consumer Law Center, advancing charity care in our state and offering some consumer protections. Is that building on an existing law or something completely new? What's the situation in North Carolina as you understand it?
North Carolina, from our research, didn't really have a state charity care provision. There had been some things that were sort of related if a hospital needed to expand its facilities and get a certificate of need. So there were certain provisions, but nothing that was really clear and comprehensive. And so what this legislation would do, at least in the part that applies to that sets out charity care requirements, it would, sort of bring North Carolina to the level of, a lot of other states that are kind of doing a good job providing charity care and making sure that lower income and moderate income patients can get access to charity care. So it wouldn't put North Carolina like out ahead of the pack necessarily, although
heaven forbid,
great protections. But, a lot of states do provide the amount of charity care that's contemplated in the legislation.
So we're talking about if your income is below a certain level, that the hospital would actually provide the care free. And if you're maybe middle class, you get some sort of discounted care. Is that some of the concepts we're talking about here?
Yeah, that if your income is below 250% of the federal poverty level, that you could qualify. I mean, you may have Medicaid and you may not need that kind of assistance, or you may have some other type of insurance, and that would be wonderful. I mean, that would be a good situation. But if there's somebody who, maybe they have a gap in their insurance, or some other issue where they didn't have coverage, maybe they fall into the Medicaid coverage gap, then charity care would be available. And I know it might sound like a lot to say like, oh, those patients could get free care. Well, hospitals have an obligation to, provide emergency services and labor and delivery services. And there are patients who, are never going to be able to pay, unfortunately, because of their financial hardships. And so to have, the hospital and debt collectors chasing after these patients for money they don't have, that doesn't really do anything for the hospital's bottom line either. So this, I think, is more consistent with like the mission of healthcare providers. They do amazing work. I wouldn't say that they're not.
Sure.
Really do amazing work in their communities.
What about for-profit hospitals? Or should it apply to all hospitals? Do you have a take on that?
Well, the legislation would also apply to for-profit hospitals. And I think that's fair. I think a lot of for-profit hospitals voluntarily do provide charity care already. So maybe this wouldn't even represent much of a change for some hospitals, but it does provide a lot of clarity to patients. And I think this also would apply to, makes it clear that large healthcare providers that are affiliated with hospitals, even if they're not actually, if they're like a satellite
part,
those could be covered as well.
I suppose there's also an element of protection when it comes to bill collection. Is that also a part? I know it's part of your model legislation and maybe part of this North Carolina legislation too, or are those two separate things?
It is part of the model legislation and part of the North Carolina legislation as well. And limiting the interest that can be charged on medical debt is part of it. Making sure that if a patient has to appeal a healthcare decision to their insurance company, that there will be a pause on collection of medical debt and credit reporting during that time, because sometimes I think a lot of us have probably had this experience. Sometimes there might be, a miscommunication or dispute with the insurance company about whether something is covered or not and how much should be covered. And so if the patient is appealing that, this gives the appeal more time to be wrapped up before the debt collection process would begin.
We're coming to the end of our time with Jennifer Bosco, who's a staff attorney with the National Consumer Law Center. We're talking about the subject of medical debt, which is itself the subject of legislation here in North Carolina right now. I guess, Jennifer, what would be your advice to an average consumer who might be listening to this, that maybe they never even were aware that the hospital that they receive services from or that they might be receiving services from has some sort of obligation or has some sort of policy? How should they find out about it? Is it on a website, or what would be your advice to the average consumer maybe who was trying to think about this issue a little proactively?
Well, if you're in the position of being able to do that research in advance of getting healthcare services, obviously that's not the case for an emergency.
Right.
But if you are able to do that research in advance, then the hospital website should have the financial assistance policy or charity care policy. They would also, if it's a nonprofit hospital, would also have a billing and collections policy that's related. So you can look for those. You could also get that from the billing office at the hospital. If you end up with an unaffordable healthcare bill and you think you might be eligible for financial assistance, you could apply at that time. The federal rules give you 8 months to go back and apply for financial assistance if you had missed out initially. Also, for high medical bills, we put out a book called Surviving Debt that's free on our website at nclc.org that has some tips on dealing with medical debt, including negotiating with healthcare provider, negotiating a payment plan. If your debt does end up in collections or on your credit report, some, sample letters for how to deal with that. So those are resources that we offer free for consumers.
And I presume that if someone is listening and wants to support the work of the National Consumer Law Center, that'd be okay too. If they go to nclc.org, it'd be okay for them to click on a button and support your work.
I appreciate you putting in that plug. Thank you.
All right. Well, check them out. Jen Bosco is a staff attorney with the National Consumer Law Center. She's doing amazing and important work to protect consumers from medical debt in this country. And it was a delight to have you, Jen. I hope we'll get a chance to talk to you again soon. Maybe this legislation will get through the General Assembly and we can talk about implementation of it later this year.
That would be great. This is really exciting. And thank you for having me.
Coming up next, we'll learn about a new WRAL-TV documentary that looks at how Durham law enforcement officials are attempting to battle the gun violence crisis in their community. Stay with us.